This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to the JCast on Jabberlog, where we jabber about everything for everyone.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and I'm sitting here with Whitney, and this is episode one of Within the Trenches. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Everybody, thanks for joining us.
With this project, it all started out, just give you a rundown here really quick. For those who don't know, I know a lot of you have been seeing posts that I've been doing lately promoting, trying to get this kickstarted and up off the ground, but it originally started as a segment off of my blog, Jabberlog, Within the Trenches. And it was based on my experience as a 911 operator. And what I wanted to do was do a little more with the segment and turn it into a podcast. So I started a Kickstarter project, which once I post everything up after this episode, I will also post up all the information for that. But what the show is supposed to be about is to give, you know, everybody, the general public, a better idea of what we do as 911 dispatchers. Now, what do you think, Whit, what do you think these people are going to think about, you know, some of the stuff that we're going to talk about, the calls, our experience, everything that we do?
I think it's going to be kind of a roller coaster ride for everybody. I think there's going to be a lot of funny on here, but I think there's going to be some sad stuff too, that people are going to look at it and say, man, you know, you take that home at night. We have to live with some of these calls and outcomes of them too, but there's definitely some funny that, you know, if you're not sitting in a room with a big group of people, nobody really gets to appreciate some of the calls that you think, is this real life? Did I really just take that call?
Yeah, I remember one of my former coworkers, she had taken a call from an elderly gentleman who he called up, and he was living in like the northwestern area of the county that we work in, which is Allegan County. And he just sounded so embarrassed. And she said, what's going on? You know, what's going on? He says, ma'am, there's a guy who's walking naked on stilts past my my window here. And you know, it's one of those calls that, you know, when you tell people what you do for a living and they ask you what's the funniest call you've ever taken, that's definitely one of them, because that's one of the things we deal with. You know, we take a lot of funny calls.
You're right, and it's actually fortunate that we can look back and say we take a lot of funny calls, because there are some jurisdictions that I'm sure they have funny calls, but they have a lot of real nasty calls they get.
Of course.
So, you know, thanks Allegan County for keeping us on our toes. We never quite know what we're going to get on the other end of that phone call. We appreciate that.
Oh yes, definitely. It's always a good time, and it even, and you know, like I said, one of the things I'm hoping that with this show that, you know, people will understand us more. You know, we're not just that voice. You know, we're more than that on the other side of the phone. You know, because there's a lot that we deal with. And I know when I talk to people and I've said, you know, or they'll say, so how was work? I was like, well, it was kind of boring. And then they just stare at me like, you're so evil and cynical. And
right.
It's like, no, I don't want people to get hurt. But, you know, it's good that people aren't calling because I know they're safe. But I also enjoy the fact that I'm there to help them. So, you know, it's that dark humor that people don't understand that I'm hoping they'll be able to understand from what we're doing here today.
Right, exposing us in kind of that quiet way through a little podcast and not having to make front page of the paper.
Exactly.
Be on the news.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing. Another reason why I wanted to do this, because, you know, a lot of the time people, when they hear stuff about dispatch or whatever, it's always a call that comes out that was, you know, that was bad, or, you know, and they're crucifying us. And there's a lot more to the story that the news, you know, doesn't always put out there. So there's probably a lot of times that those calls, you know, that they put out there that, you know, the dispatcher didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's the frantic caller that, you know, possibly didn't give them the right address, or they called you know, 2 hours after the incident happened. And, you know, we always get hit on it. So I'm hoping that with this, we can, you know, shed some light on a lot of things.
On a lot of things, I agree.
So how did you get started in this? How did you get into the profession of 911 dispatch?
I graduated from high school and went to Grand Valley here in West Michigan. And while I was a student at Grand Valley, I kind of came across a 911 position that was open for our campus police department. And on campus, it's a big school, or D1 athletics. We dispatched within Ottawa County, the county just to the north of us, and we only dispatched the police side of things.
Okay.
And so all of our fire and emergency calls got transferred over to Ottawa County. But I got in there and I dispatched for them for 4.5 years, and I loved it. That was a little bit different. It was a lot more of, you know, alcohol and drug-related calls, domestic violence between roommates, things like that, people flying through campus and whatnot. Graduated from there. Started working for the Secretary of State here in Michigan, and then happened to see an opening. This isn't exactly what my major was in, but you know, I have been doing it here with Allegan County now for just over two years, and I don't know that I would trade this job for anything else, because you know, it's always different. We don't work a 9-to-5. We don't come in and push paper all day long. I cry sometimes when I leave work. I laugh until I feel like I'm sick other days at work. It definitely keeps me on my toes. What about you?
Mine was a little odd. I ended up moving, from here to Florida. Actually, in the beginning, I didn't move. I went to visit my mom. I was only going to go visit for a couple of weeks. Well, a couple of weeks turned into like 3 months.
Nice.
Yeah. And, she said, well, you know, why don't you, you know, start looking for a job around here? Cause you're obviously not going to leave.
Yeah.
Get your butt to work. So I was looking around. I couldn't find anything anywhere. And, she ended up saying, well, you know, a friend of mine knows the chief of police, and he was saying that, there might be a job opening. And I said, I don't have any of that experience. You know, I don't know what they do.
Right.
You know, except just pick up the phone and 911, where's your emergency? I didn't know anything about it. And all I had before that was a couple stores that I had managed. So I just had, you know, manager experience. But I went in, and I remember when I sat in on my interview, it was the chief and it was the lieutenant. And I'm sitting there, and I remember I was nervous. I was so nervous. And he says, so, what kind of skeletons do you have in your closet? And I chuckled, and I said, what do you mean? And he says, you know what I mean. I said, nothing. Nothing really. I stole a car once. And he says, are you serious? And I said, yeah, I did. You know, I explained the situation. I said it was kind of a civil situation type thing.
Right.
You know, it was my car, so I was kind of taking my own car. And I thought, I shouldn't have joked, because
that
kind of screwed myself there. I didn't hear anything for a couple months. I thought, yeah, I screwed the pooch on it. And then he ended up showing up at my house, the front door, and says, hey, did you still want the job? I said, yeah. I said, I didn't think, you know, I had done that good in the interview. I thought I was done with, and you guys had filled the position. And he says, well, come in tonight at 10 o'clock is when you start. I was like, all right.
They fire the day before?
Yeah, right. And the it was a small police department. I think we had maybe, I don't know, 12 or 13 officers. And then it was just, you know, one dispatcher for the whole city. And so when I got in there, you know, it was pretty much me sitting with the trainer and him explaining things, and then this is your call. I'm like, oh.
I know you've got a lot of funny stories about that, your training experience down there.
Oh, yeah, that was...
I think some more learning experiences.
Yeah, there was... it was a lot of, you know, me freaking out, I guess is what it was.
Straight up panic mode.
Yeah, because I had never done that before, and it was just, you know, throw you to the lions, and I'm going to listen. But the good thing about it, though, was that we had a county dispatch as well. So if we got any medicals, we got the pertinent information. Okay, I'm going to switch you to county. And then they would go to county, and I would dispatch our first responders. But when it got nuts in there, and it was just me by myself, I would be... just like the chair I'm sitting in now with the wheels, I'd be rolling all over the place to look for different things, because I was the only one there. And yeah, it sucked. I mean, there was a couple times where I remember sitting with my trainer, and his name was Harry, and I was sitting next to him, and it was late at night. I never really worked a midnight shift.
Right.
And I'm catching flies, and he's elbowing me. Like, come on, boys, stay awake. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
But how many people go into a job and they're like, hey, I'm going to work 5 p.m. to 5 a.m.?
Yeah.
I tell my friends that and they're like, what? People are alive? And I think, man, you should hear some of the calls that come in at about 3 a.m.
Oh, of course. Yes.
The best shift to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the, and we laugh. However, we take it seriously.
Very it's just seriously.
Knowing what we do, they're. It we get crazy calls, and if you ever heard that when there's a full moon out, the crazies come out, that's exactly what happens.
Very much so. I have to agree with Ricardo on that one.
It seems like everybody just wants to get into a fight, but that's pretty much how I got my start. You know, I started there, and I went to the we had a 40-hour 901 schooling, like you know, the way you did it here as well, and you know, that was an eye opener too, because like I said, I had never done anything in dispatching, and they played calls for us, and they taught us how people when they witness something that they don't see everything, you know.
What's important to them?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't what we need. I understand there's a lot of blood, but we got to know if you know if the subject is breathing.
Yeah.
If they're conscious.
Exactly. And with the instructor, there was a guy who walked in to the room that we were at, and he handed him a piece of paper. And for whatever reason, he walked, well, I know the reason now, but at the time I was thinking, why is he doing this? The guy went all the way around the room and then he left. And I'm like, okay. So then the instructor's talking and everything, and he says, oh, by the way, did you guys see what he was wearing? And I said, oh, well, he was wearing this brown jacket and this and this. And he's like, oh, yeah, you guys are all wrong. Like, what? Well, what the guy had handed him was a Polaroid picture of himself.
Really?
Yeah. And the instructor turned it over and showed it to us. We're like, whoa. So, like, okay, so you were testing us the whole time. And he said, yeah. He's like, I'm just trying to tell you that in that, you know, split second, that people, they see what they want to see. You know, they give you all this information that they think they saw, but... He says he gave a percentage, and I don't remember what the percentage is now, but he gave a percentage of how many people are actually right and those that just say what they think they saw.
And an interesting point off of that is, you know, we've all learned the hard way of asking a frantic caller a yes or a no question.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. You know, you guys all said, well, yeah, he was wearing a brown coat and jeans. When somebody asks you information you don't know, surprisingly, even if you don't intend to, you have a tendency to give them information that's not correct.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You have somebody screaming on the other end of the phone and you say, is this your address? And they yell yes, and you have everybody flying over there, and they're seven townships away from where the caller actually is.
Yeah, especially with, you know, cell phones. Everybody's got a cell phone, and you repeat the address, and immediately, like you said, you know, they're in that emotional state that they just say yes right away. Like, okay, we'll go off of this. But luckily, and I'm sure all other dispatchers do the same thing, that we ask for cross streets.
Always, always, always. And trust me, if you don't do it, you get burned on it bad.
Yes, because we have a little thing called quality assurance that we get...
Womp, womp.
Yeah, we get tested on that. Yeah, those are good times.
Ricardo's a supervisor, so he gets to listen to all of the non-supervisor calls along with the other supervisors, and they get to grade us once a month on an emergency call and a non-emergency call.
Mm-hmm.
So the second you see that manila envelope show up in your mailbox, everybody gets real quiet.
Yeah. It's like, how did I do?
Slides it out and kind of peeks at it.
Like, the check's in the mail. I'm like, all right, thank you.
I noticed he's got a new shirt on.
Yeah, man. That's,
no wonder I got perfect scores on both my...
That's right. Thank you for the money for that.
You know it.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, you know, that was my jump into dispatching, and I've been doing it ever since.
How many years now since you Florida?
Oof. I think total, it's about 13.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 13 or 14 now. Yeah, it's been a long time. I have definitely listened to funny calls, bad calls.
Weird calls.
Yes, weird calls.
And then your common everyday calls where people need help and just kind of, you hate to say it, but it's kind of mundane. You know what you got to do, and you get them there, and those are always the best calls because you're comfortable all the way through.
Yeah.
But you never can expect that's what's going to be on
those
the
are the easiest
the
ones. It's those calls that you end up getting where someone has got a trach and something stuck in there, and
CPR.
Yes, and those are the one of the hardest calls. But when I first started here, I had taken a medical call, and this one is actually Well, it's kind of a funny call, but only funny because I guess the husband was laughing during the time.
Oh, nice.
And what else can you do but try not to chuckle, maybe chuckle a little bit.
Right.
But I mean, it was a medical call, and I had just I'd just gone off of training, and this guy calls, and he's just. And I thought he was crying at first, but he was laughing. And I said, sir...
Was it on a 911 line?
Yeah, this was 911 line. And I said, sir, what's going on? You know, I got all this information and everything else. And he says, well, it's hard to say. And I said, well, you know, just tell me exactly what's going on and, you know, I'll help you. And he says, well, I'm pretty sure we need an ambulance. My my wife has a trach. I said, okay. And he says, there's something stuck inside it. And I said, well... Could you see what it was? Or, you know, and at this time, actually, I had everybody hauling over there because,
right,
you know, she was having trouble breathing and all of that. And with our protocols, you know, we got to get them out there fast. So I already had everybody going out there. So I'm asking him, you know, what was in it. And he's still chuckling. And I said, what's inside the trach? And he says, well, my wife cleans out her trach with a wire brush, and apparently she snapped it in half, and it was stuck inside. And he says, I'm going to get some pliers to go ahead and take it out. And I said, sir, and then I hear, we're on scene from the ambulance. And I said, sir, the ambulance is there. Go to the front door and go talk to them first, and then, you know, thank you for calling. I'm glad I could help you.
Yeah, a side note for people who aren't familiar with the EMD protocols that we use is one of the biggest pre-arrival instructions in there is don't do anything your doctor didn't tell you to do or vice versa. You know,
right.
Only do what the doctor has instructed you to do. So you wonder, did he say, yeah, if she ever gets a wire brush caught in there, just go run out to your toolbox and grab a pair of pliers and just take care of it yourself. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't get to that part right. Where he could explain it. So he's and he just kept laughing. And it wasn't until that moment where in my head I was half chuckling in my head and half
well, yeah
are you kidding me why are you laughing
I don't
at
think
this
you should be up yeah
yeah
I
and I mean
you should be up there doing that sir
yeah it was after I hung up I chuckled a little more but I couldn't believe it. I was like, huh, so this is the way my career is going to be in dispatch. These are going to be the kind of calls I'm going to take.
I had a call from a man not too long ago actually. This is probably about 2 months ago, and I'm going to have a hard time even getting through the story. I laughed so hard. He called, and it was actually not a funny call to start out with. He called on a 911 line, mm-hmm. and he was, you know, mid-50s. He was an adult, and he was actually calling because a friend of his had said that he was suicidal. He was mm-hmm. going to overdose on prescription medication, and we needed to get help out there. So I, you know, said, absolutely, sir. So we started going through it, and he said, I don't have an address. And I said, okay, well, what's his name? Let me see if I can find him. And come to find out, he was living in a state far south of us here in Michigan.
Oh, really?
So then right there, I said, okay. He said, well, can you just transfer me down there? And I said, I don't have the capability to transfer, you know, 700 miles, but let me see what I said, do you have access to the internet? No. I said, okay, I'm going to get online and see if I can find a number for their local police department.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I tell you what, I found this number, and I during this time, I noticed that my caller was very intoxicated, very intoxicated.
Okay.
So I started giving him this number, and I read the first three digits, and then I read the second three digits, and he said, okay, and I gave him the last four digits. I went back. I gave him the last four digits 17 times. I'm not exaggerating. I played it back and we laughed so hard. Finally, he started telling me, I use these felt tip pens and I tell you what, they run out at the worst time. And so I said, can you find something else to write with, sir? And he was like, yeah, ma'am, just hold on a second. And I'm thinking, if he's got a friend that's overdosed, I really got to get this guy to call this number. And it was, the number was like 3323 or 3233. It's pretty easy to remember if you didn't have something to write with. And I said, can you write on like the dust of your television screen? And he said, no, I'm going to get this pen to work. And finally, I started laughing and he was laughing. And I said, sir, you have to write this somewhere. Can you write it on a dirty plate in the sink? And he said, I'm going to find another pen. You just wait a minute, ma'am. So yeah, 17 times I gave him four numbers and they were two of the same numbers, just different.
Oh, geez, that's crazy. See, and that's what we deal with sometimes.
17 times. 17.
On phone calls. you know, if it's not that, that somebody can't hear us or their ink is running out, it's a cell phone that's bad and we can't even get through on it, or, you know, that it's just cutting out and everything. So it's hard for us to get a lot of information. So when you're going through these crazy situations and we're asking questions, there's a lot of, you know, there's big reasons that we're asking all these questions. You know, we need to do it for officer safety, caution, scene safety. We need to find out exactly what's going on. You know, there is a point to our question, everything that comes out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes the phone's breaking out, so we have to repeat it.
Or people that speak different languages. Luckily, we're able to utilize something called the language line, where we can mm-hmm. transfer our callers down and they'll ask you what language and then they'll put you through to a translator of that language. And we have a high Spanish speaking population here. And Ricardo was able to speak Spanish and I can speak enough to, you know, work my way through a call. Mm-hmm. We're both very fortunate in that arena. But I had somebody one time that spoke Mandarin.
Oh, really?
And I couldn't figure out what dialect of Asian language it was. Uh-huh. I couldn't even figure it out. And I get the translator on the phone and it's the same thing. She said, what language do you need? And I just said, I don't know. And my caller's kind of yelling in the background. It ended up just being a motorist assist on the mm-hmm. freeway. Nobody was injured, but stuff like that. I don't speak Mandarin.
So yeah, exactly.
It takes me a minute to try to get connected with the language line. And
yeah. So yeah, anybody out there who didn't know that, we do, like she said, we've got that language line that we're able to utilize, but it is difficult when we don't know a specific dialect or what language it is. And for anyone who's never heard it before, it's interesting the way they do it, because they're playing the middleman, of course. But mm-hmm. when we ask a question and they answer it the way the person is saying it exactly. And so it's odd to hear the person say it in their language and then the translator say it in English and maybe raise an octave in their voice to try to match exactly what they're saying.
Or if it's a male caller yelling and you have a female dispatch, or if it's a female caller, that's the mm-hmm. best, and you have a male translator and they're trying to act on the inflection in certain parts of the voice. And
I mean, and plus, kudos to you guys, but
you don't ask the question as, you know, if I'm trying to translate for Ricardo, I wouldn't say, ask him what his address is. I'm having a full-on conversation back and forth
exactly.
with this translator. What's your address? And he says just what I'm asking him.
Mm-hmm. So that's good in that sense. But sometimes it can be a little funny. But, you know, on the other note of all the, you know, the funny that does happen, I know a lot of people like to hear about the funny and dumb calls that we get, but there is more that comes into us. You know, we've got calls that, you know, I know you and I'm pretty sure I know that you've talked about it before, and I've taken it. I'm sure tons of people, 911 dispatchers, have taken these kind of calls where you get a phone call in the morning or even in the middle of the night. You know, it's a spouse who's awakened to, you know, their husband or wife or whatever who is deceased mm-hmm. or having trouble breathing. And, you know, even if they've been there overnight, you know, they want to help them. They want to do that CPR. So mm-hmm. we do the best that we can to do that. And, you know, I don't want this show to be a complete downer or anything. You know, I want this to be educational. I want it to be interesting for people to know more about what we do and get a better idea and everything. But that goes along with what we do.
Absolutely.
We've got the sad calls. We've got the crazy calls. You know, we've got police chases that come in when we're on the radios and mm-hmm. people are calling in and saying, oh, we just saw this go by. And they're like, okay, we'll stay away.
Yeah.
Don't get in the middle of it.
Exactly. Hey, can you help him out, sir?
Yeah.
I want you to take your Mazda Miata and get up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you set up a road back on your Kawasaki?
Do a pit maneuver.
Right.
No, we don't say that.
No,
but
absolutely not.
But
that's what we think sometimes in our head when we get calls from people saying, do you need any help? What can I do for you? Anything? No.
Yep.
No.
Just
thanks, sir.
Yeah. Just
stop calling me on 911.
Yeah. Stay as safe as you can. that's the biggest thing. But yeah, I think we'll go into very first calls.
Okay.
So the very first call I took, it wasn't like a real call. It was the person walked in. They actually ran in. This was when I was working in Florida, and this lady ran in And the chief was just saying goodbye to me. He said, you know, you're going to be all right. This is your first night alone. I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing crazy is going to happen. Little did I know, just right after that, you know, this lady runs in and she's screaming and she's crying. And, you know, the chief is asking, you know, what's going on? What's going on? And she had just separated from her husband, and she had gone back to tell him that, you know, I want to work things out. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make this happen. Well, she went to the house and she found him deceased. And it was bad. That was my first brush with a major 911 call, because all the other calls that I had taken mm-hmm. were just, you know, minor things. You know, a car's been broken into, house broken into, which it's not minor, but it wasn't anything in progress is what I'm getting at. And it was something that was past tense that had happened. And this one was just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the chief and lieutenant go to the house to go and secure the scene. And she is still in the lobby there with me. And so I'm trying to talk to her or do whatever I can, call family members or whatever. And
that's a totally different thing than some 911 dispatchers where we work now. We don't have mm-hmm. any walk-in traffic.
Exactly.
At the other police department I worked at, you'd have assault victims that would come right into the PD.
Oh, really?
And there would be, you know, bleeding. I remember one time, a roommate got in a big fight with another roommate. But like that, most people don't see what a 911 dispatcher looks like, and you don't mm-hmm. see our facial expressions, and we feel bad with you and we're upset too. You don't see that. But yeah, to have a walk-in, something like that, you have to, you know, console her. You have to look her in the eye and say, I feel your pain. That's terrible. And that's a whole other part of being a 911 dispatcher if you have walk-up traffic. So I commend any other 911 centers out there that do have to work with walk-up traffic, because again, that's way different than what we do here in Allegan.
Yeah, that was pretty extreme, especially for the first the first major one that I had there. I mean, it was just like the table that we're sitting at, it was like a huge console, you know, then it was up and then it had the windows. But, you know, if I stood up, mm-hmm. you know, I was right level with everybody who walked in. So, yeah, we had people that would come in all the time and, you know, stuff would happen. But that one, I think, was probably the most extreme that was a walk-in. You know, all the others were just on the phone, but that one, yeesh, I will never forget that one. That one was pretty bad. They had gone over there and they came back and they were debriefing me on it, mm-hmm. on everything. But that whole time, you know, trying to really figure out what to say to someone who just found their spouse, mm-hmm. you know, dead. And I can't remember exactly what had happened, but yeah, it was a bad one.
My first 911 call here in Allegan, we take non-emergency calls until we're medically certified to be taking, you know, 911 calls that involve medicals or whatnot. So when we get a medical on a 911 call, we transfer it over to another partner who's got the certification to do so. I had just come back from my training. It's a week-long training, and I was, you know, roaring and ready to go. It was our assistant director at the time. She was shadowing me, so she really wasn't going to do anything mm-hmm. unless she had to jump in.
Right.
And it was my first 911 call of my shift, and it was from a male who, I would say late 20s, and he had gotten to his father's house and found his father deceased. And I was so gung-ho about CPR that, you know, we can save your dad. Mm-hmm. We're going to try CPR, that I had totally missed that he had said, we got him on the ground, or we were trying to get him on the ground. I said, do you want to do CPR? He said, well, yes. And he had said, I can't get the blankets out of his hands, which means rigor mortis had set in, and mm-hmm. he was beyond any help. And
right.
Apparently I didn't read my cards very well, because one of the questions right in there is, are they beyond any help? You know, if it's an obvious death and people aren't willing to do CPR, then you kind of leave it at that. But he was willing to do CPR, but it was beyond an obvious death.
Right, right.
And I look back at it now, you know, I feel so bad, because I was like, we can do this. You ready, sir? That's okay if you can't get the blanket out of his hands. Let's go. And, you know, we're passionate and we're driven, but
yeah,
it's all
exactly.
learning experiences. If somebody says I can't get the blanket out of his hands, that's a sure tell sign that CPR probably isn't going to help at this time.
Yeah. And when, you know, with along the same lines, you know, talking about CPR and everything, when I was doing my dispatching school in Florida, that same instructor, he was telling us, you know, you're going to have to do CPR. You're going to have to do this and this. He's like, but I'm going to tell you right now, he says, just so that you know, because when we take these calls, we're in the call. You know, we think about it, especially afterwards. And the worst part about being 911 dispatchers is that we don't have that closure. So, or that we don't always have that closure. Right. So one of the things he was telling us to, I guess, kind of ease our pain, so to speak, was if you're giving CPR to somebody, there's a 5% chance that they'll make it back. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, afterwards, once you hang up the line, you're going to wonder, he says, but maybe this will kind of help you. And it kind of does, but it kind of doesn't, because you almost immediately go with the other part where, you know, this person probably passed away.
Right.
But still, you still got it in the mindset where, come on, you gotta make it, you gotta pull through. And those are the worst calls that I've taken. A couple where there have been car crashes and I'm giving someone CPR instructions because they found, you know, their loved one or they've come up on this and they want to help out. So they start doing CPR.
Yep.
And then you hear people saying, come on, you can do it, you can do it. And you're sitting there listening to them do this. Mm-hmm. You're instructing them, but there's a huge part, of CPR where, you know, they're just doing their, you know, the pumps and the breaths, mm-hmm. and you're just listening. And that's got to be the worst, man.
I had one where a guy was doing CPR on his father-in-law. They were in the middle of dinner and mm-hmm. father-in-law collapsed, and he was an elderly gentleman. And while he was doing compressions, he was saying, come on. And it was an affectionate nickname. I don't want to give it out because it's pretty,
Right.
He was given this affectionate nickname and he just kept saying, come on, so-and-so, come on, so-and-so. And I could tell it was just so personal and it was his father-in-law and he was working him. And, you know, as a 911 dispatcher, all you can do is sit on that other end and keep reassuring them and telling them, I will not leave you. I'm going to stay right here. And he would say, how far do I have to push down again? How fast do I have to push again? And, you know, you just stand right there and you're kind of their kickstand the whole time mm-hmm. they're going through this process. And it really takes an interesting individual to be able to do this. You know, we, like I said, we take stuff home at night. We come home to our families, our spouses, our children, and you hug them a little tighter. And
exactly.
Yeah. Remember the little stuff a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's what I'm there's a lot of things that I'm hoping that this podcast can do, but I'm starting this out locally with the people that we work with. But eventually, I would like to be able to go to other centers and do the same thing because, like you were saying, you know, we take this home with us. And there have been times where, you know, I've gone home and my wife will ask me, you know, how was your day? And I'll say, well, you know, this happened. And I'm telling her, and she wants more than anything to be there for me, but she doesn't completely understand. And I think sometimes with a lot of dispatchers, you know, we don't always have somebody to talk to because, you know, there's people around us who don't understand exactly what's mm-hmm. going on. You know, a lot of times we talk about it in the dispatch center, but, you know, hopefully like this, you know, just us talking about calls that we've taken, I feel better already, you know, it could be therapeutic. So for people to listen to our stories, you know, it's a great thing. So hopefully people can learn a lot about what we do and what's going on. But yeah, there are a lot of times where, you know, we take certain calls and it sticks with us.
Another good thing for the public to remember is that we are just that. We're people that have husbands and wives and we're human too. And you brushed on it earlier about how whenever the public gets a hold of a 911 call, it's usually awful. Now, there was the Trayvon Martin incident where I don't know what major network it was, mm-hmm. had chopped together parts of the 911 call and made it seem way different than how the conversation had actually gone down.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, not all media does this, but it does make for a more interesting story. If you cut out a couple of questions,
of course,
and you leave just some narrative in there that, it's not really in context. That's not how it was asked. And it's good to know that we're people. And the point I was trying to get at is that when we look back on these calls, when things go bad, hindsight's always 20/20. It's really easy for people to look at these calls and say, you didn't ask that. You didn't think about ever getting to that.
Right, yeah.
Well, you know, if somebody's screaming that their spouse is running at them with a knife, the first thing you're worried about is, you know, one thing and not another thing. So it's just good to, I'm just really thankful that you're doing this and that people are going to be able to tune in and just hear our whoopses and our yays. And
yeah, exactly. Because, you know, definitely you can listen to it and you can think everything, But a lot of the times, you know, in news stories, everything's already out there for you. So people read it mm-hmm. and they go through it. It's like, well, why didn't they ask that? Why didn't they ask that? Well, when you're taking this call, it's a crazy situation. You know, there's always so much stuff that's going on. And a lot of the times people are screaming so loud that you can't get through to them. So all you can do is type in everything that's going on with the information that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to get to a question if, you know, the person's not cooperating or if you can't get through to them
or
because there's no way.
Alcohol or drugs involved, if there's mental illness involved, sometimes your mm-hmm. caller is choosing to not give you certain parts of the call. They don't want to incriminate a spouse who's been, you know, using methamphetamine or something like that. Well,
right.
That's a huge thing you have to know for officer safety cautions.
Exactly.
So if you don't get the whole story, terrible things can happen too. Even if you try to get it and a caller chooses not to give it to you for one reason or another.
Exactly. I mean, believe it or not, we get a lot of calls where, you know, people will call in 911 and we'll ask, you know, we'll say, 911, where's your emergency? Get the police out here now. Mm-hmm. Click. And that's all we have.
I like when there's some F yous, you stupid B, get them out here right now. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
Then you look at the call and you're like, what?
I don't know what's going on.
What was that
so,
all about?
Yeah. So we can only dispatch on what we have. So it's unknown situation at, hopefully, they called from a landline. And because everybody's got a cell phone. So if somebody calls on a cell phone, you know, for those who don't know, if you're calling on a cell phone, there's two different things that'll pop up. And one of them is phase two. And what that is that's like the GPS location, the latitude and longitude. We can see only a certain amount. You know, it's not like on TV, you know, we can't see mm-hmm. Exactly where we can't see you. You know, it doesn't take a live picture of you and the emergency that's going on. You know, we see a crossroad. And if we've got the aerial view, you know, we can see houses and pinpoint it, but it doesn't always work. You
but
know?
One step further back with our phone system, we only get a latitude and a longitude on mm-hmm. our screen. And then from there, we have to plug it into a program. And mind you, it's what, like seven or eight digits for latitude and seven mm-hmm. or eight digits for longitude. We have to plug those in there. And then we have to zoom in on our map and wait for it to load. Some centers have the good luck of being able to, you know, it pops right up on their map where the GPS coordinate is. But there's sometimes that's 30 seconds of us trying to just locate where you're at.
Right.
And that's just a crossroad. And then we have to say, well, on my map, it looks like they're an inch from 109th Avenue.
Yeah.
But then you have to say, oh, okay, how far is that from there?
Yeah, so it doesn't always work, you know, and if you've got a prepaid phone, a lot of the times those don't come in with that phase two, and we can't pinpoint where you're at. It'll hit off of the nearest cell phone tower is where it'll come off of.
And you have a 5-mile radius around that tower.
Right, exactly. So, you know, if you've got a smartphone or whichever, you're pretty good there with the GPS, but, you know, even with that, it's sometimes hard for us to do it. And then you have to factor as well, and a lot of people don't know, is that with us right now, we've got, you know, we'll have four people that are working at a time, but we've got two call takers and then two people on the other side running main radios with police and then running our lien information, which is the warrants and license and all of that. Well, if something like that comes in where there's a cell phone and you've got one person who's trying to pinpoint, you've got the other person on phones who's still taking all those 911 calls or non-emergency calls. And believe it or not, some of those non-emergency calls are people calling to know what the parade time is or what the fireworks
yes,
are.
Yes, I like the 911 calls when they ask what time does trick-or-treating start.
Yeah, yeah. So we're dealing with that. This person's still trying to find this other person who's having the problem. And then sometimes it'll flood in over to the other side of the room where they're trying to help us too. And all the time, we're still taking all these other phone calls. So,
and we're still talking to all the fire departments that might be out on this.
Yeah, exactly.
And the ambulance services that are doing their normal day-to-day transports from this hospital to the next hospital. And we're responsible for, you know, doing all their times and numbers and stuff like that. There's so much going on sometimes that you feel like you're doing 35 things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you really are. I feel bad when I'm on with a caller and I say, excuse me for just a minute. And then you're talking to an ambulance and your caller's like, what? What was that? And you just, you got to keep everything moving along. And
So any of you have ever called in to a 911 dispatch center and you get put on hold, if you're getting put on hold, it's not because we don't want to help you or because we're slacking. It's because everything is hitting the fan, and we're trying to do the best that we can to get to everybody. So
I'll never forget one time I was in the middle of a priority one medical. So we have priority one, two, and three. A three would be kind of not a lackadaisical response, but a slower response. And a priority one is lights and sirens, life-threatening. And I was in the middle of dispatching out a priority one. Subject had had multiple seizures in a row, and family was comfortable with them being epileptic. They knew what to do. And after this last seizure, they weren't coming out of it, and then they started having difficulty breathing, and they were still unconscious. And any 911 dispatcher, or anybody who's ever been around somebody that's had a seizure, for them to be not totally alert after a seizure is normal. And this family was really comfortable with it, but they said they're having difficulty breathing. Something's not right. They've never been like this after a seizure. So I'm trying to get my caller ready to get this patient set up if we need to do CPR. I put them on hold. I get an ambulance going, and I take a 911 call, and I get the address and where they're at. And I said, can I put you on hold for a minute? And this individual said, no, so-and-so just had a heart attack, and it was a member of the community, and they were at an elementary school. And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, I am going to have to do CPR on two different phone lines. I'm only one person.
Right, yeah.
You know, if somebody steps out to go to the bathroom, you don't have a choice. You have to make it work. Fortunately, one of the police officers lives nearby, or he was either traveling in the area. I don't think he was on duty. And he pulled in here and he said, oh, there's a police officer here. And I went back to the other line. And sure enough, I had to start CPR on that person that was epileptic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt terrible. I will never forget having to tell a man, can I put you on hold? And he said, I'm calling 911. You don't put people on hold. And I thought, oh, I wish I could explain to you why I asked you that question. Cause you know, I'm not going to go make chips and cheese or anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to do CPR on the
other
line.
A reason that you're getting put on hold. And yeah, she hit it on the nail right there. That's exactly how it goes. So, you know, we could put you on hold from your emergency, and we could pick up another line, and we ask them, you know, where it is. And if it's an emergency at the time, especially if we're dealing with something crazy before that, and we could go right into, you know, a domestic with a gun involved or a stabbing, you know, that's the way our job is. You know, we finish one call and then go straight to the next one. You know, there's no time for us to process it. And that's why, like Whitney was saying, we go home with it at times, because it's not until the end of the shift that we finally get to really think about everything and process it. And
we're walking out to the parking lot, everybody kind of looks at each other, and you know, we leave at 5 a.m. so we're walking out at 5 a.m. or kind of looks at each other like, drive home safe.
And yeah,
just, you're exhausted.
Watch out for the deer.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, sometimes we'll all text each other in a mass text message to make sure everybody got home okay, because just terrible things. I just thinking, I had an accidental shooting one time between a couple of kids, and they had all been drinking. And it was two buddies, and you could tell by the way that the caller was, it was definitely an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the weapon secured. Everybody was in the same room. I had EMS responding. Law enforcement was obviously going to go in first, so I was keeping everybody updated. And I remember telling the caller, what I want you to do, if I could keep my caller okay, she was girlfriend of the guy who accidentally had shot his friend.
Uh-huh.
If I could keep her telling her boyfriend what to do, he was okay. But as soon as she stopped talking to boyfriend, as soon as I stopped feeding her lines, he would lose it and start screaming, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. So I was telling her different things to tell him, apply pressure here, make sure nobody goes by the weapon, because I want to make sure the officers are safe when they come in. And finally, I kind of ran out of stuff to tell her to say. I'm still trying to think of stuff. And I said, okay, one of the things in our medical cards is have the patient rest in the most comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of going through my cards like, what else can I have her tell him? Because this is working really well. So I told him, make sure you have him tell his friend to relax in the most comfortable position. So she's feeding it. And the same inflection I give her is how she's giving it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not even listening to what she's saying. And the guy gets halfway through it, and he said, she said to make sure you relax, you rest in the most... And I can tell he looked back at his girlfriend and he said, did you tell her that he was shot? And that's another time I laughed and I thought, oh, good point.
Yeah. How is he supposed to relax? He's got a
rest
bullet
in the most comfortable position with a bullet in your liver.
Yeah.
The guy was fine, and it was an accident and whatnot, but that's another one. I was like, well, God, my caller must just think I'm a bonehead, but you want the patient to be comfortable and just relax. They're almost there. Did you tell her that he was shot?
Yeah, those are the funny times where, you know, it's those times where you put your foot in your mouth, and those really suck because there's nothing you can do. And, you know, I'm not afraid to say it. You know, I've done it myself. I've taken calls. I took a domestic once, and I've taken domestics many times, but this one, I asked the caller, you know, well, where's your mom at? And he says, well, my mom died last year. Oh. And I said, my condolences. Yeah, and he's like, yeah, I said, I'm really sorry. And he says, it's all right, man. You didn't know. I was like, well, thank you, because I feel like a complete jerk right now.
What about the times you're going, you know, you're talking to your caller, Chris, or something like that, Pat, talking back and forth, and you know, you're at the end of your conversation, you say, all right, man, you know, thank you, sir, you have a great day, and then right at the end, they're like, I'm a she, or I'm a ma'am, and you're like, I'm lucky, because I can say, hey, I got a lower voice, it's not like Ricardo's or anything like that, but I have some people say, all right, thank you, sir, and I'm like, aww. All right.
Like, all right, I'll do that. Yeah. I'll go with it.
Okay. Yeah. Bye. Those,
and that's what, things like that is what makes the shift go by fast, you know, because there's some nights where, you know, we'll have a shift that it's just nothing but bad. You know, the extreme is happening all the time, and you're just thinking, when is it going to end? You know, you're happy to help, but it's just a lot of nuts that's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of think, how can all this happen all the time?
You never have time to come down after a call.
Right, yeah.
That's just overstimulation, thinking, the tone, setting out ambulances, talking to officers. It's just nonstop, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but we don't get an actual break. Our break is between phone calls. You know, sometimes we'll get lucky enough that there's enough people working where somebody will order food and one person will go and pick it up for everybody and come back and they'll walk in and the tones are going off and the phones are going off. I got the food.
Throwing Chinese
Just
food
get
at
over
you.
Here.
Punting. Egg rolls across the room.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just nuts. So having those funny calls that come in, and even those times where we can put our foot in our mouth, is it's good, you know, to break up the whole monotony of everything that sometimes can happen. But staying on the funny, mm-hmm. I took a call once with the names mixing up male and female. This one was hard though, because I can't think of what it's called, but the person had one of those like little machines that they got in their neck where they sound like a robot, you know, like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but it was a domestic call, and this person was having a domestic with her daughter what it was. And I'm going through the whole thing, and the call is just about done. And this whole time, I thought this person's name was Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that it was actually a Carol. And because I said, okay, sir, you know, I'm glad I could help you. You know, thank you very much for calling. And it was Carl, right? And I just want to make sure I got the information right. And I hear, no, it's not Carl. It's Carol. This thing makes
Dang
me sound
it.
Like a man. And then and she was laughing.
She
actually laughed afterwards, but she goes, ha, ha, ha. And so I chuckled too, and you know, she just says, thank you very much for your help and for what you do. And then I hung up and I sat there for a moment and I thought, where else would this happen? You know? And
exactly.
What other, you know, job? I'm sure it probably happens in other jobs, but really, at the time, I was thinking, where else would this happen? That something like this, you know. So, and I wrote about it as well on the blog. But yeah, that calls like that really, really stick out.
I had a BOL one time. BOL is a be on the lookout. So people are. This is not voice. I just thought of this funny one. It's because this is when people ask me my funniest call.
Yeah,
is what I think of. Had a BOL, be on the lookout, and my caller was concerned. Normally, it's erratic driving. People are calling about somebody who's intoxicated, going over the lines or whatnot.
Yeah.
And He was concerned because in the back of this work van, he could see carpeting that was rolled up. It must have been a pickup because I think he could see into the bed. And I said, okay, is it not secured down? And he said, no, it's in there, but it just looks really weird. The carpeting doesn't look that old and it's rolled up. I said, okay, I guess I'm just not sure why you're concerned. And he said, well, there's two garbage bags in there too. And I thought, no, he can't be thinking somebody cleaned up a crime scene. He can't be thinking that. And we got a little more into it, and he said, I don't know. This carpeting just looks too old to be being transported, or it looks too new to be being transported with garbage.
Uh-huh.
Well, to anybody who works in this profession, you got to put out what somebody gives you.
Exactly.
You have to put it over the air. Mm-hmm. He's concerned about this, so I do. And I remember I typed it all in there, and our officers on the road can see who had taken the call. Our names are attached to every line of narrative we add into the call.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a message from one of the county deputies, and he sent me a message, and he said, your caller needs to stop watching CSI. And I thought, I can't tell him that, but...
Yeah, everybody has a cell phone. We do appreciate it, though, when you guys call. There's just sometimes there's tons of calls. I mean, we have, what, like 5 or 6 main lines for 911, is it?
For 911, yeah, we have...
Yeah, I think it's six or seven lines. But anyway, the point of it is that, you know, we could be sitting there just hanging out, and then every single one of those lines will blow up in red saying incoming call. And we know there's either a huge fight going on, or there's a very bad accident, or even just a vehicle in the ditch. You know, it could be something that small. But yeah, everyone's got a cell phone, so we get every single call.
Every single call. The funny thing about that is everybody will look at each other and say, oh, and get ready and start taking the 911 calls. But it always amazes me how we could all be right by each other talking in the middle of a story, the middle of a conversation, and everybody runs to do their job, and we do these jobs, and it's fast-paced, and we're getting emergency going and police going and whatnot. And then about 15 minutes later, everybody comes back together, and we all are right in the middle. We all pick up right where we left off. My husband will notice sometimes and say, how do you, what? And I'm sad, my whole job is like this, buddy. Like, I'm in the middle of a call, and then I go back to a conversation, and then I go back to the middle of a call, and I go back to a conversation, and sometimes you just think that our minds are going a million miles a second, because they usually are.
Exactly. Now, I sometimes get in trouble for that, because, you know, I'll go home and my wife will say something to me and I'm still in work mode. Mm-hmm. I can't break out of the work mode because we multitask so much that I'm hearing everything that's going on. So she's talking to me. I can hear my son in the other room. I can hear my daughter getting into something. The TV's on that I think sounds interesting, and I smell the food. So everything is going on, and then I zone right back in. Did you hear what I said? What?
So you look like you're paying attention?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that has gotten me in trouble sometimes.
That's what happens when we come to you with all our complaints.
We are coming up, actually, just on the 1 hour mark. Oh, yeah, the look on your face. I told you that once we start getting into it, that we were just going to keep talking. But this will be the wrap-up to episode number 1 of Within the Trenches. Thank you very much, Whitney, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me here, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Yeah, if there anything that you would like to leave the public with, something that we haven't talked about or even to elaborate on that, you know, the public doesn't know about what we do?
You know, everybody out there that's listening, that's a 911 dispatcher, you know who you are, you know what your personality is like. But I just want to remind all of our callers, you know, we're all in this job for one reason, and that's because we want to help out the community. And
oh, exactly. I completely agree.
I kind of don't really know how else to put that into words. We want to help you. This is why we're in this job.
Exactly. And like I said in the beginning, this whole Within the Trenches podcast, something that I've been thinking about doing for a while now, and we're finally doing it. We're starting it today. And like I said, we are live. on Ustream, actually, for everybody to listen. And this will be recorded as well, and it will go on Jabberlog for everybody to listen to. And I want to keep this going. There's actually 8 days left on the Kickstarter project. I was trying to raise $1,500 to get the equipment needed to make this possible, to have myself and three other dispatchers to do this show. And so if you guys are able to at least share the information, pledge anything that you can, I believe we're about $330 right now. I'm not sure that we'll make it in the 8 days, but hopefully we can. Just got to keep plugging along, and I will have everything linked up for everybody. You can always follow me on Twitter at RM2, the number 2, at RM2 Visions, as well as Jabberlog at Jabberlog, and you can find all this information on my website 24/7, thejabberlog.com. Have a good time, everybody. See ya.
Bye.